Tango Tango Papa 1670, July 4, 2012.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from work. I had to come back to work. So right now I am at Olney, Illinois, and I'm backed into the dock, and I'm at a Walmart warehouse here, and waiting for them to unload the load. This is one of the places where they give you like a pager that you'd get in a restaurant, and it beeps and buzzes when the load is unloaded, and they've got the paperwork ready. So I've got the pager right here in my hand. Been here probably, I don't know, a good hour, maybe a little longer, and so just kind of sitting here waiting. It's very hot here today. It's 102 degrees according to the weather widget on my phone. And being that this is Illinois, it's pretty humid. I don't know what the humidity is, but it's very humid. And so not only is the temperature actually hot, so then you'd have what they'd call a heat index, and I don't know what that would be, but needless to say, it's pretty warm and very, very sticky. So I'm just kind of sitting here in the back of my truck in the sleeper, and I've got the battery-operated air conditioner running, and it's not bad in here as long as I'm sitting here in the back, and I just kind of sit still. It's kind of blowing directly on me. It's not bad. Now, I actually could turn it down some more and turn the fan up if I wanted to. I probably could do that without any problem. Normally, I just when I turn it on, it has a default setting that it comes on, and that default setting typically will last, it'll run all night long with no problem. You know, I've seen it run as long as 12 hours or more without really getting in, you know, without really running out of power. The air conditioner itself, I don't know how long it will continue to run, but after it gets, the voltage drops like to, I don't know, let's say 13.5 volts or a little bit below, it will cut the accessories off. It'll cut those off, but the air conditioner itself will continue to run. So I don't, at some point it would quit too, because they've got battery protection built in so that you don't actually run the battery dead to the point where the truck wouldn't start. So in any case, I'm kind of fairly comfortable right now. I was outside and just sitting there, kind of was sweating. Of course, it's warmer than body temperature. Body temperature, of course, is about 98.6, and it's 102, and so gonna end up sweating a little bit. So, in any case, this load I picked, it loaded on July the 2nd in the afternoon there at Springdale, Arkansas. And so what I ended up doing, I drove, after I got the load loaded, I went back home and spent the night at home. And then I got up yesterday morning. Yesterday was the 3rd. Got up yesterday morning, and it was probably about 10:15 or 10:30 whenever I left. And so I made it. I spent the night at Effingham at the Petro truck stop there. And then this morning I got up and got something to eat and then came on over here. And I timed it so that I got here right at 1:30. It had a 2:30 appointment time, 2:30 p.m. appointment time, and of course Walmart wants you there actually an hour ahead, and so that worked out perfectly. And so as I said, now I'm in the process of simply waiting for them to unload it, and lately it seems that they've kind of slipped with their unloading times. There was a period of time where they were pretty consistently staying within 2 hours of the appointment time. They were getting the loads unloaded, but anymore I'm finding that most of these distribution centers are sort of slipping to the point where you might be there 3 or 4 hours before the load is unloaded. But so anyway, it doesn't really matter, and I don't have any idea if there's going to be a load today after this is unloaded. I don't know if they're going to come up with a load or not. That's really difficult to say. Now, I probably better do that. I have this trailer that I have. I noticed when I backed into the dock, it had the latch on the back of the trailer is kind of fallen off. When I got the trailer the other day from the guy in Benton, Arkansas, the other day when I was on my way home, I swapped trailers with this guy and then delivered the load in Hot Springs. And so this load had, or this trailer had, the latch was loose, and now it's really loose. So I'm going to probably need to I want to go ahead and do that right now. I probably should just stop recording and do it rather than try to talk and do that at the same time. So I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to just go ahead and pause this, and then that way I can send a message to the breakdown department and explain to them what's going on with this, and then they can direct me where to go to get it repaired, because I can't really, the way it is right now, I don't want to load the trailer, because you can't really latch the door very, you know, super effectively, and especially if the place wants to put a seal on it, it's just not going to work the way it is right now. So let me go ahead and pause this. Be right back. Okay, I'm back. I sent them a message, kind of letting them know, you know, the breakdown department, and then they can sort of direct me where to go to get it repaired. I don't know if they can do that at a truck stop. They should be able to, but they might. I don't know if they can or not. Since it's a trailer, they might send me to some sort of trailer facility. So some place that works on these trailers, but because they're going to have to, I don't know what they'll have to do to reattach that latch. I don't know why, you know, what the deal is, but so anyway, it has to be fixed, because it, what I'm going to have to do when I leave here is probably, you know, when I close the doors, the trailer doors, I'm going to have to wrap a, you know, like a rubber strap or something around the two latches. Each door on the back has a latch. The one on the left, if you're facing the back of the trailer, the one on the left is okay, and so that door latches, and then you close the other door, the right door, and that's the one that the latch is kind of fallen off of. And so I'm going to have to wrap something around there to kind of prevent that from coming open. So it's, but it can't be reloaded then the way it is right now, because almost every load requires some sort of a seal, and you can put a seal on there, but it's kind of ineffective, because you can still open the door, and so that's not good. So I will have to wait and see what they say. I'd kind of forgotten about that, and as I was talking about it now, I just remembered it. So they can be kind of slow sometimes, as far as the breakdown department can be a little bit slow at times responding. So just have to wait and see what they do. So, but while I was home, my parents came I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago. They came up from South Texas, and they're spending the summer there. You know, they went ahead and brought their big motor home back. They had had it down in South Texas, and they went ahead and brought it back, and so they're staying right in the motor home. And so when I left, I turned my air conditioner off, or actually I set it on 90 degrees. Now it may be to the point today where it might come on, because it's very hot, obviously, in Arkansas as well. Let me check and see what the deal is with the, I'm looking at my Nest thermostat right now. Let's see if I can get it to load and see what it tells me. When I checked earlier, the temperature in the house was up in the 80s. Let's see, what does it say? Well, it's up to 89, and I've got it set at 90, so I bet you that it'll come on sometime this afternoon. There's a good possibility that it will. And right now it says, at least the Nest thing says, it's 97 degrees at home there in Arkansas. Let's see what the weather widget for the iPod says. Well, no, it may not be updated. It says 90 degrees. Well, nope, it says 97. It updated. Now that's interesting. It picked up Olney, Illinois here, because in the iPod it's got the local thing. And it says locally right now it's 106. So it's even warmer than I thought here. So it's very hot here. So, oh well, it's summer. That happens. So it's kind of ironic. It's warmer here than it is at home. And it's in Dallas, Texas, it's only 95 degrees. You'd think Dallas would be up above 100. It's, typically it would be, but that's kind of ironic, actually. Pretty ironic. So it's cooler, kind of out in the west or the central part of the country. It's a little bit cooler. Just kind of thumbing through here. 91 degrees in Ottawa, Ontario. Ian's up there kind of suffering in the heat because he doesn't have any air conditioning in his house. Normally, I guess they wouldn't need it because they don't have heat waves like this that often. And so they're up to 91 degrees. But hopefully it'll cool. It looks like it'll cool down. It's supposed to cool down to 59 degrees tonight. So hopefully once the sun goes down, it should cool off a little bit. See, Minneapolis is 100, Des Moines is 100, Lincoln, Nebraska is 97. So, it's warm. Chicago's 100. Wichita, Kansas is 100. So, but it's 106 right here where I'm at. So, no wonder I was kind of sweating a little bit when I was outside. So, it's warm, and that happens, and that's why we have shelters, and that's why we have air conditioning. You can survive without it, but it's not very pleasant. That's for certain. It's really not very pleasant. Got to make sure you drink plenty of liquids, and I don't know, especially probably the older you get, at least with me, I won't push myself. In this kind of heat, I just will not push myself. And the heat, once your body has to try to, because it does something kind of remarkable. It maintains 98 degrees. So if the temperature is lower than 98.6 degrees, your body's able to maintain it. But on the other hand, when it's above, like right now, it's 106 degrees, and you're out in it, your body actually, if everything's functioning properly, it actually is able to cool itself and maintain 98.6. So it's actually cooler than the environment, which is kind of interesting. So, but it's just hot weather. I guess Washington D.C. Area had a storm a few days ago, and I saw a bunch of headlines that they were without, with large areas around Washington, D.C. were without power. Of course, that's a fairly high-density population area, and I don't think they've done a very good job, generally, of maintaining the power grid, and the storm kind of took it out, and now you have a heat wave, and you know, everybody's kind of suffering in the heat, and you know, without their air conditioning. And I don't know. My advice remains the same. You know, if you're living in a big city or a huge, highly populated area, at this point, I'd be getting the hell out of there. I'd find some other place to live, I think, because those places, you just hear, it seems like the, you know, there's all these shootings that are happening. Uh-oh, there goes the, do you hear it? Hear it? There's the buzzer. It kind of went off. It was making a weird noise because I had it laying on this kind of nightstand thing here. But so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and pause this for right now and go pick my paperwork up. Well, it's now quite a few hours later. Picked the paperwork up, and the breakdown department sent a message back saying that any shops would be closed today because today was the 4th of July, and there are a lot of businesses that are closed, obviously excluding Walmart, but which it was pretty busy, but so I decided I would come back to Effingham, which is, I don't know, 35, 40 miles away from Olney. And there are shops here down there at Olney's in a very rural part of Illinois. And the guy came back and said there's a couple of shops here. He didn't tell me the names of them. And he told me to resend the breakdown message in the morning, and then whoever's there in the morning can deal with it, because he won't be there. He's a night and weekend, or you know, probably a night and weekend guy. So anyway, that's the plan. And so I came here to Effingham, and I got the trailer washed out, and then I came to the truck stop here. There's several truck stops here at Effingham. This time I came to the TA truck stop, and so I went in and got something to eat, and then I've kind of been sitting outside enjoying my bag chair. the $20 bag chair that I bought a few months ago at Walmart. And so I've been sitting in that. And also while I was home, I was at Walmart with my parents and happened to walk by the bag chair department. And, you know, kind of the lawn and garden, I guess, department. But anyway, they had I found this table, a plastic folding table, and it you know, it's kind of ingenious the way the thing folds. And I think it was, how much was it? It was like $14 or something, and it looks extremely durable. I think it's made by Rubbermaid, and so I bought that, and so I have that too. And you know, it's interesting. I a lot of times, it's happened over and over since I've had this chair. I'll be sitting in the chair, and there'll be a driver that comes along and sees me, and a lot of times they'll wave, or I've had them honk at me, give me the thumbs up sign. I've had people come up or walking by, and you know, and this one guy the other day was he was saying, "Well, I've never thought of that. You know, I've got several of those kind of chairs at home. I never did think about bringing one with me." And so today, there was this driver that parked nearby, and he walked over. That's when the sun was still out. He walked over and he says, "This man knows how to live." And he chit-chatted for a while, and then he went on. But so it's pretty interesting that nobody has thought of carrying a chair, these folding chairs, the so-called bag chairs. They fold up. They don't take up much, a whole lot of room. They're kind of long. Once you fold them up, they're probably about, 3 feet long or whatever once they're folded up. But and then maybe 8 inches in diameter once you put the bag on there. So that, you know, it's pretty easy to store kind of underneath the bunk in the side pocket. And that folding plastic table doesn't take up much room either. So, and it kind of beats sitting in the truck. You know, I get tired of sitting in the truck because I'm doing that quite a bit, obviously, while I'm driving. And so it's kind of nice not to have to sit in the truck. And even, you know, and of course it's hot today. It's hot here. It's still warm. But I can deal with that. I was in the shade, and it wasn't too bad. I was sweating a little bit, but wasn't bad. And as I say, it kind of beats just sitting here and being kind of cooped up in the truck. So, but did that. By the way, I also, while I was home, I did make a trip to the dentist, and they put this other cap in, crown. Another crown on back upper tooth, and they were telling me, boy, I think I've got gingivitis, and what that really is there's, you know, the bone, the gums kind of retreat and the bones retreat, and you know, and I've already had some significant bone loss along with gum loss, and what they want to do is the so-called deep cleaning, where they actually numb, you know, they numb like the upper part or the lower part. They only do half of the mouth at a time. Let's say they would numb the lower part. If they did that first, the entire lower part of my mouth around my teeth, and then really aggressively clean, you know, kind of down into the gum line, and try to, you know, because there's tartar or whatever, there's stuff in there that's kind of built up, and that's really kind of what causes the at least part of the problem, that causes the gum to kind of pull away from the tooth, and then so this is the idea, I guess, with this so-called deep cleaning, is that it helps the existing gum kind of tighten back up to the tooth, but then the teeth, and then she said once they do that, then you got to get, they really have to be careful and have you come in every 3 months instead of every 6 months to get your teeth cleaned, and so that's a pain. I would rather not do that. So I told them, you know, I've been, since the visit 6 months ago, or whenever it was, I've been very, very diligent about brushing and flossing every day. And, you know, because I got to where I was a little bit lax about doing it. And I did go through a period of several years where I wasn't going to the dentist to get my teeth cleaned. Because I did that for years, and then I kind of got out of the habit of doing it, setting up those appointments every 6 months. And so it's, a lot of it's my own fault. You know, I can't really blame anyone else. It's just, I didn't want to, you know, it's just kind of easy not to do it. And so I, you know, I have no one to blame but myself, and I take full blame for that. So, but in any case, I told them, well, you know, let me try something else. I'm going to, you know, because I have that water pick at home. And at first I bought that, and I thought, well, I would take it with me, but it's with a home type of model, you know, where you got to plug it in and what have you, sort of leave it assembled and plug it in. That really doesn't lend itself to kind of carrying it in a truck stop every day. And there are some truck stops that have a plug-in in the bathroom, obviously, for guys that have electric shavers. But... So this, I went ahead and I bought a portable one, and this portable one, it has a battery, and it's a rechargeable battery, and it's got a reservoir that's kind of built into the handle. And so I've been done it twice now since I've came back to work yesterday. Since I left yesterday, I've done, you know, I'm doing this at least once a day, and I'm going to really push myself and make myself do it. After I brush and floss, then at least once a day, preferably in the evening, use this water pick, this portable water pick, and it the reservoir is smaller, so I have to fill it up about three or four times when I use it. But I don't know, it does make a difference. It's interesting. You can brush and floss and as best you possibly can and try to really get any debris out. And then if you use a water pick and you kind of spit the stuff out in the sink, you still will, this thing still dislodges stuff. And so when I've been using it, I've been kind of really aggressively because it comes out, it's kind of like a little pressure sprayer for, like a miniature pressure sprayer for your teeth and your gums. And so I've been really aggressively, spraying the, gum line to try to dislodge anything that's in there. And my teeth are not a sore. I can say that, because there have been, the past 6 months, my teeth have been periodically, I'd have, kind of like a sore tooth here and there. Not really anything bad, but there has been some soreness. And so now that I've been doing this, and I did it while I was home as well with the one that I have already before I bought this portable one, I've been really aggressive about trying to, to clean that gum line. And my teeth are not, right now, none of them are sore. So hopefully if I continue to do this, well, there is one that's kind of sore, but I'm going to just keep up with it. And I'm just going to make myself do it every day. If you didn't take the time and do it. And with a portable unit, it's pretty easy. All I really need is water. Now, I could probably do it with here in it, or just stand outside the truck or whatever with, a supply of, like if I got a gallon jug of water or even bottled water, as long as the bottled water was kind of like room temperature, I could probably deal with it. Because if you used cold water, it would be pretty unpleasant. Just kind of shoot that in your mouth. It's better if you got warm water. But I could do it with bottled water as well if I wasn't around a truck stop that where I could do it. So, but I just went in the inside there a while ago, and it just takes takes about 5 minutes or so, or something like that. And so I'm going to really try to do that and see if that kind of makes them happier. And they did schedule me for 4 months. So they set up an appointment, a cleaning appointment for 4 months from now. And I've still got other teeth that do need capped. But as of right now, nothing's really chipped or causing a problem. And so that's subject to change. I could get them all capped at once. I think I've got maybe two or probably three more that he wanted to cap. And probably could do those all at once, but there might be four. I'm not sure, but because you can see, and he showed me when I went in there one time, he had this little wand thing that had a digital camera on it, and he was taking pictures inside my mouth, and then he was showing me the images on the, each one of their exam rooms has a television, and he can switch that over to the computer and show the images that he's captured with that digital camera that's kind of on a pin, made especially for dentists. And I could see, he showed me where there's kind of cracks in the porcelain, you know, sort of lines, and he said those were cracks. So, I'm careful. Careful about, and I'm also being kind of careful about what I eat, and, I think we're, it's easy to get into trouble if you eat things that, I don't really want to, eat ice or anything like that. That's bad, or anything, where you really got to kind of crack something or apply a lot of pressure. Or, and you grind things, or when you're chewing things like meat, you get little pieces stuck here and there. Or another thing is let's say chicken or something, where it's the crust is kind of crispy, and you kind of really got to grind around, and that can kind of mess with the gums too. Or if you eat, if you're not careful when you're eating things like potato chips or corn chips, you can kind of end up poking your gums and making them sore. So, I'm kind of being careful about that, about what I eat and how I eat, and making sure that I'm, not doing things that are kind of injuring my gums. But the big thing, obviously, is I think right now, besides, brushing and flossing every day, is using this water pick, and it does feel to me like it's made a difference, because my gums, apart from that one place right now, my gums are not sore at this point, and I can kind of tap my teeth together, and kind of like in a biting motion, kind of tap them together, and I'm not feeling any sore spots. So I'm going to continue with that and see if that makes a difference. And I guess as a last resort, I will go ahead and let them do the deep cleaning. As I said, they do it half at a time, the lower half and then the upper half, I guess, or whichever one maybe they do the upper one first, I don't know. But they do half of the mouth, half at a time. They don't do it all at once, because I can imagine that it's that even though they numb it, and then they aggressively get in there and clean it, I just bet you that's painful. I bet that causes trouble. I bet that's even after the numbing goes away, I bet you that it's it leaves the gum sore. That's probably why they're only doing half at a time. And so don't really want to do that if I can avoid it. So we'll see what happens. I should have been more aggressive. I've been for years and years and years, I've been really good about brushing my teeth and flossing, and I don't know, in the last few, when I was making a dental appointment, going in there every 6 months to this one dentist, and I missed an appointment because I had to call them and cancel and what have you. This has been a number of years ago, probably back, 2003 or something. Excuse me. And I missed it, and then I just never set up another appointment, and before you know it, several years go by, and, so in the meantime, I'm still brushing and flossing, but there were times when I just didn't floss because, I just felt like, well, I don't have time, or it just kind of, and I just didn't do it. And, I'd do it, I'd make sure that I did it every day, or instead of every day, I'd do it maybe every couple of days or whatever, but I wasn't as diligent as I should have been. And, I have no one to blame but myself, and whatever happens, happens, and I just live with consequences, and that's that. So as I say, if I have to, I'll go ahead and have them do the deep cleaning, and kind of go from there, and go through whatever unpleasantness, and and that's that. So, but I don't know. But I do like this little portable water pick. It's kind of a nice little device. I had looked at it before, And I almost bought one, and then I ended up buying the like a home model. And as I say, I was planning on bringing that with me and, you know, using it. But it's just that would be almost impossible. It would be possible to use it in the truck because you have to have AC power for that, which I do have. So the only way I would have been able to use that would have been, let's say, standing outside the truck. You know, with the thing plugged in, standing outside the truck, and with some kind of a water supply, you know, to fill it with, and then kind of doing it standing there. You know, with the portable one, makes it a whole lot easier. It's just got a smaller reservoir, and you have to fill it up more frequently. And even the home one, I've got to fill it up twice. You know, to really do my mouth. So, you know, this one, you know, I have to do it about 3 times. Excuse me. So we'll see what happens with that. I think I mentioned that I bought that, the wireless, it's a Bluetooth GPS, so it's just a little square flat thing that's got a battery built into it, and it'll connect to an iPod or an iPad or an iPhone for that matter, which it wouldn't make any sense on an iPhone because you've already got a built-in integrated GPS chip. And if you've got an iPad that has 3G or 4G, it's got any of those have built-in GPS chips. But the iPad that I have does not have. It has, it's just a Wi-Fi only, 16 gigabyte. And so this thing attaches, it'll attach either to the iPad or the iPod and via Bluetooth. And then it gives it very exact positioning, you know, and it'll also connect to a computer as well. It's capable of connecting to a computer and functioning as a USB GPS. So I've been in kind of experimenting with these different apps. I think I mentioned one of them. It's HEMA, and it's a nice little app. It's what it is. It's kind of like a regular road atlas map, you know, with a white background, and it only shows major roads, and it's very useful. You can zoom in and out, but it's very useful to be able to kind of get an overview of where you're going versus, you know, like Google Maps or a regular GPS map. Just doesn't give you a very good overview. You know, even if you turn off the satellite image, the roads just doesn't give you the overview that a regular road atlas type of view gives you. And so this HEMA USA Maps, and there are other countries that are available for that as well, gives you a very good overview, and it kind of fills the gap between a regular paper road atlas and a GPS type map, and or a computer type map. So have that, and so that works with the GPS. And then also I did buy the TomTom GPS app. And now the TomTom is kind of funny because what it tries to do and I don't know if it's because it's this European company or whatever, but it'll try to take every little shortcut that it can. Even I don't know, it's kind of weird how that works, but it does seem to, you know, because I'm comparing it to some of the other the other GPS, you know, the GPSs that I have, and it really does you know, it tries to cut corners. It tries to take shortcuts. Now, I don't know. I'm going to fiddle with the, when I have time, I'll fiddle with the settings in it and see if I can kind of make it avoid secondary roads so much. But, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, you know. But the, and there are a bunch of GPS apps that are available for the iPod or the iPad. You know, there's what is it? Copilot is one of them, and they've got, there's a Copilot truck app that sells for $150, so it's kind of pricey. And I think there's what is it? PC Miler, and I think Garmin has one. And there's probably some other ones. There's some free ones as well. There's about three free ones, but I don't think those work quite as well. Obviously, you're better off if you pay for one. And so it's there's a bunch of stuff that's available. And so this, you know, this is kind of, it's kind of a handy handy little device to have if you don't have a chip that's integrated into your iPad or your iPod, and you want some sort of, you know, the ability to GPS ability, then this gives it to you. And it will work in the background, so you can start it and then switch to another app, you know, or you're listening to music or whatever, and it'll actually, or a podcast or whatever you're listening to, or you can even be streaming stuff, and it will kind of come over the, it fades it down and kind of comes over the top of it and tells you when to turn. So that would probably be pretty useful. Let's say I'm running it on my iPod when I'm on my motorcycle, and I have the earphones and then the helmet on. You know, kind of put my helmet on, or put the earphone, the earbuds, then put the helmet on, and then put the thing in my pocket, and it could easily kind of guide me wherever I'm going. So without even having to look at it. Now, there are motorcycle GPSs, but they're waterproof, water resistant, and they're pretty pricey. They're more expensive than a truck GPS is. So, but this is just kind of an option. It's just nice to have options, and it's nice to kind of play with this stuff. It's, you know, the, some of this stuff is can actually have some practical applications. And some of the GPSs, they're, depending on their database that they use and how they tweak it, some of them have things that the other ones don't. And so every one of them has some sort of a thing that it seems to do as good as or better than the rest of them. And probably the best one that I have is the Garmin truck GPS that I've, you know, that I've had for, I don't know, several months now. That's probably, you know, probably maybe a year. I don't know when it was I bought that thing, but probably about a year. That one seemed, well, I guess maybe it was winter time when I got it. But anyway, that one seems to be the best one. It gives me the most options, because I kind of like it, you know, like to be able to display the speed limit, whatever the speed limit is on the road, and then my actual speed, the time of the day, and so on and so forth. And the Garmin is capable of doing that. You know, it's very flexible in what it allows you. You can change what it displays. You know, what you want it to display, you can kind of change that. It gives you options. So, and these other ones don't really give you any options like that. And so the Garmin, at least this Garmin truck GPS that I have, does give you options. It would be nice, you know, it's got a 5-inch screen. It would be nice if it had a bigger screen like this Magellan GPS that I'm going to write the review about. It's got a 7-inch display, and so it's very nice, big, but it's they don't display as much stuff, and it doesn't seem to be nearly as flexible. So they're not really taking, you know, the way I look at it, they're not really taking advantage of the bigger display. You know, they've got more real estate there on the screen, and they're just not taking advantage of that. So I'm gonna, you know, when I write the article, I'm gonna kind of go into all the kind of the pros and cons of what I found with the thing. And you know, and I'm now that I'm, because I used it while I was at home in my pickup, and then now, you know, I've been using it yesterday and today in the truck here, and kind of comparing it to the Garmin and kind of using it, and then I'm, you know, I kind of find myself, well, you know, what's the speed limit? You know, where's the speed limit at? And, you know, how fast am I going? You know, it won't constantly display that. You have to tap this little thing, and then it shows you how fast you're going with some other stuff like the elevation and what have you. And then it's got this little compass thing that tells you which direction you're going in there, or which direction you're going. But it's very, very unreliable. You know, that doesn't seem to be reliable. The compass thing doesn't seem to be reliable at all. You know, and then the little thing only stays up there about 5 seconds, and then it slides back down. And there's no way of forcing it to stay up, so that I can find. So, and then the manual that came with it, you know, is really rudimentary. It doesn't really talk about the features, or it doesn't really go into any of the details. Now, I don't know. Maybe there's a there might be a PDF file or something on the Magellan website that I didn't really look at that. But there might be something on their website that kind of goes into a lot more detail. But at least with the Garmin, they really, as if I remember correctly, the either the manual that came with it or the PDF file was more elaborate in kind of telling you what you could do and with all the different functions. So I don't know who makes this Magellan or where the company is at. I need to do some research before I write the article, or when I'm writing the article. But overall, I would say, even though, you know, some of these things, you know, like TomTom has got some nice features, especially with their HD traffic, Garmin is probably the best, the most, you know, it has most features. And, you know, the Garmin is probably, you know, in my estimation, at least for a truck GPS, the Garmin is probably the best one. So, I don't know. That's, none of them are perfect, you know, that's, none of them are perfect, but, I wish, you know, the Garmin, I wish it had, you know, it would be nice if they made a bigger, you know, if it had a bigger screen for the price I paid for it, you know, it'd be, you know, because a bigger screen is, it's just bigger, it's easier to see, so, but we'll see. I mean, that stuff is still, even though the GPSs are pretty sophisticated anymore, the thing is still evolving, and, basically, I think they just need to kind of maybe improve the processor speeds. Now, the Garmin that I have, you can see that the processor lags, you know, and then with this Magellan, you can really see that the processor lags. One of the features I like in the Magellan is that when you're inputting, you know, you go into the screen where it's got the keyboard, and you're inputting the... like a, you know, let's say you're inputting Effingham, Illinois, well, you start typing E, F, F, so on and so forth, then it starts making suggestions, and it also speaks each letter. And so that's actually quite a nice feature, you know, because then it speaks each letter out loud. And that way, you know, if you make a mistake, you can, you'll hear it right away. So that's one of the really nice, and it tries to predict what you're typing in there. And the Garmin does not do that. So that's one of the features that the Magellan has that I really do like. So I don't know. We'll see. So anyway, I've been listening to... I've mentioned it before. There's this King James version of the Bible, and I've been listening to that. And then also, I've been there's this fellow that's, you know, this guy was on the radio for years. His name was J. Vernon McGee. He's a preacher from, I think he was from Pasadena, California, is where his ministry was. And so this guy is through the Bible Radio, is what the name of it was. And he passed away sometime in 1992. However, his organization kept going. And so every day, he'd go through the entire Bible, and it would take like 5 years of worth of daily programs through the Bible Radio. And so he would kind of concentrate on some areas of it, and then kind of some of the other ones he'd kind of go through quicker, you know, just kind of depending. So I've been kind of listening to that, you know, and so he really still in the book of Genesis on that, and he's kind of explaining things. And the guy really, for, you know, kind of a conventional preacher, this guy really got it, I think. You know, he really, and I'd listened to him on the radio, you know, in years past, even probably when the guy was still alive back in the 80s, early 80s, I remember listening to him. But that's still available, and there's this app that you can get for your iPod or your iPad or your iPhone, maybe Android, I don't know. And then there are podcast versions of it too, but through the Bible Radio. And so I've been kind of listening to that here and there. And then also, as I say, I've been listening to the King James Version of the Bible. Now, I'm kind of already, I don't know which book I'm in, but it's interesting to listen to because there's so much stuff that, you know, there's some stuff that you hear, you'll hear preachers all the time talk about, you know, and one of them is this so-called fear of God. Now, that's a saying that people have, that, you know, that'll put the fear of God into you or whatever. And I've never been able to really understand that phrase. What do they mean? Fear of God. Why should you be afraid of God? You know, now, obviously, if you're wrong, you know, maybe you should be afraid. But if you really want to find God, if you're genuinely wanting to find God, God is not something you should be afraid of. So I never really understood what they meant by that phrase. And then, but I was listening to this, and I don't know which part it was, but it was in this audiobook version of the King James Bible. And it, right, you know, within a close proximity, you know, it talks about fear of God, and then it says, you know, also fear of Jews. The fear of the Jews. And so then I got it. You know, the context of that is sort of revolving around, you know, if you have enough, and it's, I've said it, but I didn't put it this way. If you have enough people that are decent, if you have enough people in a society that love the truth, if you have enough people in the society that have a genuine identity from their creator, then that's a pressure. And that creates group pressure. And so the people that, you know, that would be bad, or the people that don't really have genuine identities, will kind of end up going along with the group pressure. And so that's, you can see where they, I don't know why they picked the word fear, because it sort of works, but it sort of doesn't. It can be misinterpreted. But let's say fear of Jews. Well, what do you, you know, in that particular part of the Bible, it was talking about, in that case, the Jews were, the Jews then were kind of going through a period where they were all kind of being decent, and you know, and they weren't kind of going astray, and all of the people that were kind of around them ended up, whether they liked it or not, they ended up kind of respecting the society and kind of, you know, and weren't making mischief. And so when the you know, in this case, where the, if the fear fear of the Jews sort of departed, then all of a sudden they all, you know, the people start, you know, people start making mischief, you know, the people that are not genuine. And so the same thing is fear of God. Fear of God just means that if enough people in the society are decent and have a decent, you know, they have a genuine God-given identity, and enough people genuinely want the truth and are genuinely honest and, you know, so on and so forth, and are genuinely kind of self-governing, and that's part of it too, then the other people, the remainder of the people that aren't genuine, that don't have a genuine identity, will kind of go along. They'll go along to get along. They'll respond to whatever the greatest pressure is. So in other words, fear of God sort of equals, it's kind of a group pressure, but it's a group pressure that's based on genuine identity. If you have enough people in society, then you've got, they've got a genuine identity, and if enough people have that, then the other people will go along with it. And the other part, you know, you talk about self-governance, and there are a lot of people nowadays that want big government. They want some kind of a nanny state. They kind of like being enslaved to the state, and the state's going to kind of take care of them, and they think they're going to get their goodies. Well, if you know, the same people will go around with their Bibles, and they think they're Christians or whatever, or they think that they're good people. They haven't ever really read their Bible or listened to their Bible, because it's right in the book of Genesis. You know, if God wanted the Jews to be self-governing, He wanted them, to each individual person, to be self-governing. That's the ideal. And what did the Jews want? They wanted a king. They demanded a king. They wanted a king. They wanted someone, basically, someone that they could kind of worship, in a way. Someone that would represent, you know, kind of represent government to them, the king. You know, and then they'd be slaves of the king, subjects of the king. And so God ended up giving them a king. Some of the kings were good, and some of them were rotten. But we're meant to be self-governing creatures, ideally. And in order to be self-governing as an individual, you've got to be genuine. You can't be fake and plastic and phony. And you can't go around worrying about what other people think of you. You can't be enslaved to other people's approval. Because if you are, you've missed the mark. If you are, you're dead. And just you don't know it. In a very real sense, being born in sin means being born, in a sense, we're born dead. Sort of dead to the spirit. We're sort of separated from our Creator, so we're sort of born in a state of death. Sort of a state of spiritual death, in a sense. And so, you know, being born again, you know, the Bible says you have to be born again. Well, what does that mean? You know, how are you going to go through the womb again? No, it doesn't mean physical birth. It means that you have to be, you know, somehow that the spirit, you have to be open to the spirit or the identity of God. You have to want that identity. You have to get your own resentment out of the way. Resentment is how you play God in your own mind. Resentment separates you from your Creator. Resentment separates you from that potential source of identity. And in that state, you're empty. In that state, your state of existence, you're externalized. Whether you want to be or not, you're a slave of your environment. Whether you want to be or not, you're a slave of the approval of the people around you. Whether you want to be or not, that's irrelevant. As long as you hold on to resentment, and as long as you're proud of what resentment sort of, the externalized identity that resentment turns you into, you're proud of it, you're a slave of the environment, and you're separated from who you could be, and you're empty. Devoid of anything that's meaningful. And so the way back is to be still. You know, and there's a kind of a very special way of being still in the form of meditation. It's on my website. Go to TruckerTomPodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that. There are about, four files that you can download, or you can listen to them on your computer, download them onto your iPod, burn them onto a CD, and they will teach you how to meditate. And it's a very, very, very simple process. It's just a way of kind of being still, kind of bringing you as a, we, you know, whatever we are as human beings, we have this point of awareness. And if the meditation properly practiced will help you sort of focus your attention, that point of awareness, get it out of your thoughts, out of the whirlwind, out of the machinery of your mind, of your brain cells, out of your thoughts, into the present, and aware of the present moment. And that is where your Creator is. That's where God is. And in a sense, you kind of allow that, the reality of your Creator, to kind of catch up with you. You know, you've known your Creator as a conscience, as a guilty conscience nagging at you. You're, hey, you're wrong, hey, you're wrong, hey, you're wrong. You did that wrong. You said the wrong thing. You did the wrong thing. You see it as a guilty conscience, and you think that it's the reason you feel guilty, and the reason you feel bad is because society somehow programmed you that way, and if society would just reprogram you, you'd feel good about everything. It's not true. You'll never feel good about killing your baby. Abortion. Never, you know, insert anything, you know, you never feel good about doing any of those things. You know, robbing, raping, murdering, pillaging, stealing. Never feel right about it. Ever. Never get away from that. Very few people are actually able to kill their conscience. And so you need to allow that conscience to kind of catch up with you. But if you can use this meditation and learn how to be still, and it can be a little painful, you know, because the conscience, you know, at first your conscience, there are things that you've been running from your entire life, and, you know, it's like a snowball going down the hill. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, layer after layer after layer of things that you're not looking at, you're not facing properly. And you end up with a more and more and more guilty conscience, a bigger and bigger and bigger conscience that you're carrying around. You know, it's kind of like you've got this big bag that you're dragging around with you. This great big weight kind of tied around your ankle that you can never really get away from. So if you practice this meditation, and chances are, I can't promise it's going to help everybody, but chances are that it will help most people. And if you find that it does help you, then it's up to you to continue it. It's kind of like me with the flossing and the toothbrush and the water pick. It's up to me to do it, you know, and if I don't do it, then I suffer the consequences. So if you find the meditation helps you, then continue, you know, whatever, you know, continue with it. You know, it doesn't take much, you know, once or twice a day, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, especially before you go to bed at night. And at first, most people get immediate relief, but then it's up to you to continue with it. And if you continue with it, you kind of go through a period. You go through periods where it's like you don't think you're getting anywhere, or it's like you think you're going backwards, you know, kind of backsliding, or you know, two steps forward and one step back type of thing. Continue with it. That's part of the process. It's testing. You're being tested. It's up to you to pursue it to the end. The Bible talks about that, by the way. Pursuing it to the end. That meditation. Three of those files are from Roy Masters, FHU.com. I would also suggest that you look that up on iTunes and look up the FHU website, and they've got tons and tons of material. And Roy Masters has been on the radio probably for 50 years, and he's got, you know, just thousands and thousands of hours worth of programs that are available. He's given lectures, and you know, he's light years ahead of me. You know, but so that's there, and that's a tremendous resource. But give that a try. It won't hurt you, and it's a very simple process. And if you can do that and really face that conscience, you think that conscience is something guilty and bad and you want to run from it, if you could actually face it without resenting it, you only have to face it once, and then the guilt goes away, and then all of a sudden that thing that you've been running from is actually a source of identity. And if you're one of the people that is looking for that, you know, this is what I was looking for my entire life. And I didn't find it immediately. It took years. But it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. Because without it, without the identity that comes from your Creator, life is a very empty thing. You know, simply living your life and eating food and trying to socialize and all that, without the genuine identity that comes from your Creator, and you kind of got this externalized identity, it's empty. It's devoid. There's nothing there. It's a walking death in a very real sense. Death means separation. You know, there's another phrase in the Bible, you know, let the dead bury their dead. Well, how can the dead bury their dead? There's two types of death. Physical death, spiritual death. So what it's saying is, let the spiritually dead bury their dead. Let the spiritually dead bury their physically dead. So it's all very interesting stuff, but there are a lot of things in the Bible that the typical preachers never, ever, ever mention. And, you know, this was just one of them. Fear of God. What, you know, because I was always kind of confused by that phrase. I didn't know what it meant. You know, and it, you know, is it, you know, why should you be afraid of your Creator? Now, obviously, as I said, if you're doing, you know, you're doing bad things and so on and so forth, then maybe you should be, you know, you should be afraid. But on the other hand, if you genuinely want to find your Creator, why should you be afraid of Him? You shouldn't. So the phrase fear of God, you know, just remember, fear of Jews, it's revolving around, if you have enough people in the society, whether it's a Jewish society or, you know, in the case of ancient Israel, or you know, American society or whatever society, if you've got enough people in the country that are that have a genuine God-given identity, they're genuinely good people. They're not just fake and phony plastic wind-up robots, but they're genuinely good people that are really seeking, that really love God, love the identity that comes from God, and have a genuine identity. If you have enough of those people, then the people that are fake and phony or will kind of go along to get along. That becomes the greatest pressure. But only in this case, it's a genuine pressure versus in the absence of that versus the externalized identity pressure. And of course, people will, if you don't have a genuine identity, if you're separated from your Creator, then you go along with anything. People, the more resentment that you have, whether you're aware of it or not, you become increasingly suggestible. And I'd say the average person today is extremely suggestible. It's amazing how suggestible people are. They respond to whatever the greatest pressure is. And that can, you know, and often that pressure is an antagonizing pressure. All someone has to do to get you to go along is get you upset. You know, you see it in the supermarket checkout line. The little kids, the parents, because the parents don't respond correctly, they don't respond properly, they end up, the little kid, they teach the little kid, kind of by default, they teach the little kid, well, all I got to do is just throw a fit, throw a little hissy fit in the supermarket checkout line, and, dad and mom will get upset, and then, before you know it, they end up going along with them. And then they get what they want. They get their way by throwing little temper tantrums. That's where, the bully type behavior comes from. Because it's more, then it evolves from temper tantrums into, hitting people and, screaming at them and what have you, and kind of pressuring them to go along. And then you have strong before the weak, weak before the strong. So, anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off, see if I can get it uploaded, get headed to bed. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.